Goddard Reel 12. Could you tell me now how these parachute experiments were organized?
The C-17 under Wheelwright was equipped merely as a patrol airship, but she had one or two additional fittings. For instance, there was a rather remarkable fixing of a balloon basket underneath the port lobe, lower lobe of the airship envelope, forward of the forward engine. That carried a cinema operator who could take pictures of the release of the parachutes, which were fixed underneath that same portside lobe, ready to be released. And when we were in the air, four or five parachutes would be released either at the same time or one after the other to compare their dropping performance in time and in space by taking cinema pictures of them as they fell away from the ship. There were, at that time, about a dozen, perhaps more, different types of parachute which could be used, some British, some French, some American. Aeroplanes, generally speaking, didn't carry them, but parachuting had been done for many years before the war as a sort of stunt for the public amusement. Fancy ladies would drop out of balloon baskets on a nice Saturday afternoon and come down at the Alexandra Palace, for instance. That's the sort of thing that had been going on, so there was quite a market for parachutes of different kinds, but they had never been used in the military sense, except by Maitland, who had been himself rather a pioneer in this work and had done quite a lot as a freelance military man, trying to find out which were the best sort of parachutes. And that was really why Pulham, his own station, was used as an experimental place for testing these. He had a reputation. So there was a question was whether the kind that was had a former which caused the parachute to open safely before it left, and this former was attached to the body of the aircraft that was carrying it, in this case an airship, or whether the free-falling type of a parachute with a little pilot parachute that pulled out the main parachute out of a pack.
And you were using both types in this experiment?
We were using both types and many variations of those types. It depended on the method of folding the parachute into its pack, whether it should be folded peripherally or in a longitudinal string and then laid up like an intestine in a coily sort of curl, or just how they should be folded and packed, and what material you should use, whether it should be silk, or whether the silk and net should be used together, or how big the hole should be at the top, and all various kinds of things which were not a matter of science but a matter of empirical testing.
As far as the parachutes that were fixed to the airship basket you were using are concerned, how was that fixing arranged?
Well, you had a wire pennant, a wire strand, or just a length of wire, let's call it, which was attached to a circular drum in the case of the Guardian Angel parachute. The parachute was then folded up rather like a concertina around this circular drum. And then when the release took place, and let's say when the sandbags attached to the airship body were released so that they pulled away and pulled out the parachute, the circular former on which this parachute was folded remained hanging from the airship and trailing along with it at the end of its pennant. When I say pennant, I mean just a length of wire. The others were just dropped freely, but their parachute was put, the pilot parachute was pulled out of the bag, so that really went into action and pulled out the main parachute out of the pack as the thing fell.
Did you observe any general characteristics of the two different types, the free ones and the fixed ones, when they actually fell away? Was there any general behaviour patterns of the two types?
Well, yes, I'm afraid that I was pretty vague about the merits of various kinds of parachutes. I wasn't there for the main experiments. I only heard about them from hearsay and chat in the mess. And, of course, various people had various fancies and favourites, just like you do with racehorses. You have various technical views about things. But I think that the kind which remained... which left a former remaining fixed to the aircraft was less popular because it was likely to get entangled or messed up with an aeroplane. If you were in a difficult situation, if the aeroplane was turning upside down and that sort of thing while falling, so it was best to be free altogether. And that was one of the considerations which decided on the Irvine parachute being adopted. I'm not wishing to do a line shoot about that particularly. I think there were various other types which were nearly as good. But the maximum number of safe openings came from the type that was chosen. And others sometimes failed, just didn't went down like a wraith without opening at all, or opened and burst.
Were... these pilots used by men in these
parachutes.
Experiments?
The parachutes used by men.
During the experiments?
No, not at all, except right at the end, Maitland himself, who was a parachutist, went up in the ship, as he did on other occasions, but on this particular occasion he went up dressed for a ducking in the sea, and I wasn't there, the pilot then, Wheelwright, flew him over the... coastline and dropped him into the sea, and a waiting motorboat picked him up and brought him ashore. That showed that he had the greatest confidence in the particular parachute that he used, and I think that became the service type, but it took a long time.
And there were one other series of experiments which you were involved in, namely the towing on the end of a cable which was attached to a winch of balloons whose engines had failed. Could you tell me about those experiments?
Well, yes, I would. That was after my own airship had been shot down, which I think I could tell you about another time. But on this...
Bring in the end of your own airship as
well.
Well,
I'll tell you that now, then. Mm. For some reason, which I can't remember exactly, I had to go away for a weekend. It wasn't due to sickness, as far as I know, but I was away for a weekend when my ship was in commission. And this was the only time I was ever away when a ship was available for flying. My second officer, a very fine fellow called Jackson, a merchant sailor with lots of initiative, decided that he would take the ship out, go on patrol, and he took with him another officer and my crew. They decided not to do what the routine thing was for protection of shipping in our own shipping lanes, but to go over and see what was going on the other side of the North Sea. I think he hoped he might see a submarine emerging from Kiel or somewhere. But... in fact, he was seen before he saw anything and was shot down in flames by a German seaplane when off the coast of Holland.
What were the purpose of these winching experiments?
Well, airships were prone to become balloons, as I've told you before, by virtue of the fact, or by lack of virtue, of their reliability, their engines. Yes. And we would have, often would be cases of an airship making a safe forced landing with a dead engine. Then it would have to be deflated where it was, and the balloon detached from the car, and then a great deal of transport operations and botheration to get the thing back to a place where it could be put to rights. We hadn't any system of mooring out in those days. We were trying to do something about it, but in fact it wasn't practical. Maitland, who had a lot of experience with balloons and ballooning and with kite balloons, got a kite balloon winch sent to Pulham, and he asked me if I would use, he rather directed me to use an SS type of airship, which was then not being wanted for any other purpose, and that became mine. And I attached it to this kite balloon winch and let it up and pretended I was a kite balloon. And then I would tow it, get my airship towed about the country lanes of Norfolk to see what the problems were involved. And of course, on a fine, clear day with no wind, there was no problem at all, except when it came to telegraph wires. On a windy day, there were all the problems in the world of keeping the ship stable, keeping her head to wind, stopping her being blown sideways and kiting down to the ground pretty well. And it was a very exciting operation without any very great value.
How was the winch carried?
The winch was a motor car, really. It was the chassis of a motor car on a road with, instead of a box on the back to represent a van or something sort. It simply had a fairly heavy winch, which had a coil of wire on it, and the airship would, or the kite balloon in France or in wherever they were used, would go up on this, pulling out the wire from the winch, and then it would be hauled down by the motive power of the engine of the motor car.
Did you ever have occasion to use this method of towing your airship for real, as it were?
Oh, well, yes, there was one occasion when I did do that, and I think that was the last occasion that the thing was used. I had been out on a voluntary and rather exceptional chase of a submarine reported in the Wash on a very windy day. I don't remember that there were any coastal airships involved. I think it was thought it wasn't suitable weather for them, or else they were unserviceable or something. But anyway, I got out my airship with another chap, and we flew up to the Wash, head to wind. It took a heck of a long time to do it. Had an involuntary forced landing on the way by accidentally dropping the trail rope when we were passing over a military camp, and the soldiers hauled us down, much to our surprise. Anyway, we got over that. We went on to the North Sea, to the Wash, and as usual, saw nothing. Spent a long time there looking at nothing but bright water. And then when the storm abated a bit and we'd had enough and we decided there was nothing there, we returned back home. And of course, not of course, but as often happened, the engine stopped. And it stopped altogether 14 times that day, either 13 or 17 or 14. I just don't remember what it was. And I had to get out and swing the propeller. Something was wrong with the magneto. And we got it going again, time and again. But in the end, I couldn't get it going anymore. And it looked as though what little wind there was then was going to cause us to drift past Pulham. And so when I was as near as I thought I would be to Pulham, I dropped the trail rope, and already I had notified what was going on, and a party had been sent out by road and had spotted me, and they got hold of my trail rope and hung on to it. And in the meantime, I had asked for the winch to be sent out, and we attached the trail rope to the wire of the winch, pulled up the wire, and fixed ourselves to the winch by the wire, and in fact got ourselves towed home. And
this was at night?
Well, it was at dusk when this operation began, and we got back into the hangar at about 12:30 midnight, having negotiated a considerable number of telegraph wires without breaking them by various ingenious means which weren't altogether scientific. I think it was in August that I went there.
In August, you went to East Fortune and became involved with the work of a travelling examining board for the purpose of testing various kinds of tradesmen. How were these tests organised?
The examining board consisted of a president and three or four officers who ostensibly, and I think in every case except one, were fully qualified to examine airmen in the trades concerned. As you can imagine, there were all sorts of trades in the Naval Air Service, riggers, fitters, blacksmiths, carpenters, clerks, cooks, goodness knows what. And they had to be examined orally to see about their fitness for promotion from the point of view of intelligence, leadership, and that sort of thing. And they had to be examined technically in regard to their handiness in their trades. And if you were a cook, you had to bake some bread or make a pudding or cook some meat. And if you were a fitter, you would have to show that you knew how to file a piece of metal flat and smooth, or make some particular gadget which a fitter would be able to do.
Did the board, of which you were one of four members, contain enough experience to be able to reasonably evaluate the very wide range of tradesmen you were testing?
I would have thought the other men were fully qualified by experience in themselves practically doing the work, as well as understanding what men should be able to do at their particular station of responsibility. But the one exception was myself. I was sent to this board to examine fitters and riggers and some of the allied trades like blacksmiths, things with an engineering slant, when in fact I was theoretically only qualified to examine airship personnel on airship matters. But in fact, we went to all the RNS stations, including kite balloon stations, seaplane stations, aeroplane stations, fighters, all sorts of aircraft, fleet air arm, deck landing aircraft, and all kinds of things that I'd never seen before. But nevertheless, I was quite reasonably happy about this. I think I